Welcome to a special episode of Missing the Mouse. This week, we're going to be talking about the Florida Project, what we now know as Walt Disney World, and what all went into purchasing the massive amounts of land necessary to create such a huge resort. Take it away, Mr. Conductor.
Your attention, please. The Walt Disney World Railroad, now boarding for a scenic trip around the Magic Kingdom. Board!
So basically, it all started way back in the day. Walt Disney, you know, owned studios in Burbank where they made movies. And he wanted to build, like, just a little family park across the street. And he bought 16 acres of land. But when he went to the city to get approval to build his family park, they turned him down.
And now Burbank is kicking themselves. Looking back, you know, I have to assume if anybody was around, even when Disneyland finally hit and became the success that it became, if there was anybody who was still on the city board from when Walt Disney came and said, "Hey guys, I've got this 16 acres of land and I'd like to build a little bitty park, a 16 acre park." And they're like, Nope, we can't allow something like that inside. That's not zoned for that proper, you know. You can't have a park in a commercially zoned area, or whatever the reason. Well, I don't know exactly what it was, but there was something that should have led to somebody losing their job after it was all said and done, right?
Yeah. So basically, he went and worked with some people and found 160 acres of orange groves in Anaheim and bought that and turned that into Disneyland.
Okay. Is that not a little bit of a, you know what, I can't build the 16-acre family park. So let's go 10 times the size. Because you know what, 160 acres, that's how I work, you know? If I can't build one website, I build 16 websites or something, you know? That was weird to me when I recognized the scale at which he jumped. He went, "This sounds like fun. No, 160 acres and a full park."
Yeah, it's almost like he wanted to stick it to Burbank.
Yeah. He's like, "Ha ha, Burbank. You just don't even kind of know what." I just wanted 16 acres, but now I'm just going to make bukus of money and you guys can all cry.
In the city,
at your missed opportunity. Yes. Well, yeah, because it's not just Walt Disney's making all this money, but everything around me then starts making money because people show up to go to my park.
Right. And so like a bunch of motels and fast food places and just, you know, buildings, like people, Disneyland was there. So people started buying land around it and building stuff. And eventually lots of those places started to pop up because, you know, there was a demand for it. Even today, there's, you know, only three hotels on the Disneyland property and it's not enough. And so even today there's demand for motels and stuff around the parks.
And it's interesting how, like, so think about Disney Springs and that area. And you know how you have, like, the good neighbor hotels that are in that area that are pretty nice upscale motel. And then as soon as you get off a property, then you fall into, like, and don't get me wrong, there are some great hotels off property as well. But there are also a lot of, like, dirt cheap motels.
Yeah, there's a lot of places to stay for $65 a night off property.
Right. And the same thing happened at Disneyland. But instead of being miles and miles away from the park, it was just across the street. Like, you walked out the main gate, crossed the street, and boom, you're at a...
And there's a Best Western right there.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of upset Walt a little because it was destroying the sight lines and kind of the beauty that was visible from inside the park. And to his credit, he did a pretty good job of building, you know, around that, because there are not a lot of places inside Disneyland that you can see outside.
No, but you can. And also, you know, Walt Disney didn't. Okay. So he went from 16 acres to 160 acres of ideas.
Right. Yes.
Right. And so he didn't stop at 160 acres of ideas and go, "Okay, guys, I'm all out. You know, we could destroy a parking lot or whatever," which is what happened to make DCA. But that 160 acres became limiting to him. He went, I have more ideas and I have nowhere to put them.
Well, and he had a whole geographical demographic of people that weren't coming to the park. I mean, is less than 5% of the visitors to Disneyland were from the east of the Mississippi River, even though that's 75% of the U.S. population.
Right. So he had plenty of people showing up at at Disneyland, because Disneyland was popular, but not everybody, because, and understandably so. I mean, that's a huge trip to go from, you know, say Georgia to California or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's a 3-day drive, and it's a long flight too. You know, that's not an easy 2.5-hour flight. That's like a 4 or 5 hour flight. It's a long time to fly. It may be even longer than that. It may be closer to 7 hours. I don't know, but it's a long flight for sure.
It's a long trip for people in this day and age. It was a longer trip in that day and age.
Right.
Because we're talking about 19...
It was in the 50s.
Mid-50s. He's looking at this and he's like, we've got this huge area of the country that we're not serving.
Right.
And I don't like the fact that I'm boxed in, so I need to do something about that.
Right. So he began to, you know, do some research and try to find a place in the eastern U.S. to open another park. And there were like a bunch of weird things, you know, like opening a park with NBC, which would be crazy because NBC owns Universal now. And if all of that had gone through, you would have a Universal Disney park, and that would be pretty funny. But there was, you know, talk about opening a park with NBC in New Jersey, but the weather would lead to short operating seasons. Niagara Falls, but again, that would be pretty crazy weather.
Okay, and aren't those just kind of like, those just seem like weird spots to me to have a Disney park. Niagara, yeah. I'm gonna go do Niagara Falls and maybe a little Disney while I'm there. And so I don't know. That one was weird to me that they were even considering it. And then the whole NBC thing, like, sounds weird, but if you realize when Disneyland was done, that was actually done in partnership with ABC.
Yeah.
That's how he got the money and everything to make that happen, was the partnership for, you know, the weekly show from Disneyland, which was great synergy for him, even, you know, back then when he was just working with another, what at that time was another company. But they had this deal worked out with ABC, so why wouldn't you go, hey, you know, NBC saw what ABC got out of the deal and said, we wouldn't mind having a piece of that pie.
Right. And yeah, I don't think it would sounded as crazy then, but now, I mean, just knowing what NBC has, you know, become, if everything had played out the same and NBC had a stake in Disney World, I mean, it would just be really funny. But yeah, and like New Jersey back then, you know, New York was kind of a dangerous place. And I feel like New Jersey, you know, wasn't real family friendly.
The way that
Florida is.
Yeah, I don't know though, because back then Florida was nothing.
Right.
I mean, at least the area where we're going to end up, right, was
yeah,
nothing.
Swamps.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, it was swamps. But they also he considered a domed park in downtown St. Louis, which we don't have time to get into now, but is really ahead of his time. And I mean, I guess they found out pretty quickly that just was not going to work.
Well, that is such a, like, we need to devote an entire episode, I think, just to the idea of Riverfront Square, which is what this was going to be called, because it's such a, like, it was like two city blocks wide and five stories high. And there are so many conflicting stories on why that didn't happen, but none of those things seem to be because it was not a possibility. Like, they were going to, as far as technologically, they could have made it happen. And again, we can get more in depth on that story at some other point, but yeah, they were looking all over the place, you know. And I think for me, I kind of go, oh, Florida, they put it in Florida because Walt liked the weather or whatever. And that's the short story that we all get. I never realized prior to really researching this episode how many I had heard something about St. Louis at one point. But as far as like Niagara Falls, that far north, it makes sense from the population center perspective. But right. I never even realized that was under that serious of consideration.
Right. Well, and I think a domed air-conditioned park in downtown St. Louis probably would have been really expensive, although people probably would have really liked it because it gets pretty hot there.
If they want to build it now, I'm totally down for it because yeah. You know, it's a quicker trip than Orlando is for me. So
right.
And I'm all about that AC come summertime.
So basically they, you know, kind of looked at all those locations and decided that just wasn't going to work. But they, so while they were flying over, you know, St. Louis, Niagara Falls, all those places, they also flew over a spot in Florida. And some Disney team members had driven through parts of Florida. And like we were saying before, Florida was really just nothing back then. And I think, you know, Walt Disney especially could look at a blank canvas like Central Florida. And, you know, I can just see, knowing what I know about him, I can see him like the gears turning in his head and him really, you know, understanding what this could be.
Yeah, which, you know, then opens into now what part. And recognize that we aren't saying the entirety of Florida was a wasteland back in the late 50s. But Central right. Florida was orange groves, ranch lands, and swamps.
Any lay person who went there would say you cannot build something here.
Yeah, because you're out in the middle of nowhere. But they had noticed that, you know, that the roads were starting to take shape. And I think they were very intelligent in they weren't thinking about the way things were. They were thinking about the way things were going to be. Though I almost wonder if they wouldn't have needed to change their minds because apparently, you know, they land in Tampa and they're driving up to Ocala and Walt Disney is trying to keep this whole thing a secret because remember, we're not letting anybody know. At this point, I think the name for the project is like Project Winter because we don't want anybody knowing what's going on. And most right. people in the company are totally unaware of it. And they're heading on up there and people are recognizing Walt Disney. They're like, oh, you look like Walt Disney. And apparently, I saw the interview that Bob Foster did with D23 in which he said, you know, Walt had this happen. And then he like starts vigorously denying knowing anyone by the name Disney. What's a Disney? I don't know a Disney. Mickey Mouse.
Me.
Now, yeah. If you'd have named that cat Mortimer, that would have been popular. But this Mickey thing, I don't know about that.
My name's Galt Brisney.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Or my name is Retlaw. Retlaw. No one will know. But yeah, so Walt did eventually say, that's the place. Florida. So once he made that decision and said, okay, we know somewhere in this central area, but we need to get a little bit more exact than that. So he calls up Buzz Price, who was actually the guy that had told him, you know, somewhere in this area is going to be the best place to build in Anaheim. And at the time was working for another company. He had told Buzz, hey, you need to start up your own company. You can do this. And so Buzz had called Economic Research Associates and so they sent out a member of their company. His name was Bill Lund. And this is where, to me, like there was a secrecy in the story up to this point where they're trying to keep people from knowing that this project is going on. But now we've got boots on the ground. And this is where it starts turning a little bit spy novel-y to me. Because yeah. Bill Lund...
This is where it gets real good.
Yeah, yeah. Bill Lund is headed into Florida because he's going to start checking out, you know, property values and what's available and all that kind of stuff. So they get him business cards, stationery, and a phone number that identify him as a member of this law firm called Burke and Burke in New York, rather than letting himself be identified as part of Economic Research Associates. Because if you hear he's part of that. Well, they're over right. in California. And by the way, they're headed up by this guy named Buzz Price, and he was buying, you know, he was the one who, like, you could put all this together and maybe come back to Disney. And they were so worried that this could come back to them. And
if there weren't too many degrees of separation between him and Walt Disney.
Exactly. Exactly. So by adding this additional stuff in, and essentially all that they're trying to do at this point is, number one, keep people from knowing that they're even thinking about this. And number two, keeping that property value from going up. Because remember that once Disneyland was built, everything starts building up around it and the property values just skyrocketed.
Right.
And everybody is now aware of this. So if word gets out that Disney is buying up land somewhere, number one, you're going to want a lot more for that land because you right. know it's Disney and how bad he must want it. And number two, anything that Disney doesn't buy is going to go way up. So if he's, you know, so he buys 500 acres and he, you know, he's actually looking to get 20,000 acres. Anything after that first 500 is just going to be crazy. Right.
Be so, unfairly priced extortion.
Right. Yes. Yes. Extortion against that huge company. But anyway, so Bill Lund goes, you know, skulking off into Florida and, you know, starts doing the research and comes back and provides Disney with basically a layout of, okay, again, kind of like what they had done in Disneyland. This is the area that we see as being the best option. And this isn't the first time that they had done this. They had done a more bird's eye view back in 61. And at that point they had said, Ocala seems like the place that you want to go. But then by 64, there had actually been new roads built. And I think maybe just getting a more direct view of things. Essentially in 61, most of the traffic was going through Ocala, of people going through the state. So you had a lot of tourist traffic through that area, but Orlando was starting to gain a lot of that tourist traffic. And so by 64, they were about even, and Orlando had a much better, basically, financial base. So had Disney been looking at land just a few years earlier, we may not see the Walt Disney World that we see today because it mm-hmm. might be located in the Ocala area. And I thought it was funny that in the actual report, which in the show notes, there is an unbelievable amount of sources that we used for this, and we cannot it would probably like triple the size of the show if we cited everybody we used, but please go and read up on this stuff because we're trying to go in depth for you guys, but we're still just giving you a bird's eye view. But
Can include all of this huge, we have a huge list of links. We can include all these. In the show notes.
Yeah. All of these are going to be in the show notes, but the actual report you can read because Buzz Price donated his papers to a university. And in there, it says, it should be noted that the rainy months for the Orlando area are between June and September. Although the rainfall total for these months is high, the rain comes during short intervals of time and heavy thunder showers. As a consequence, the showers last only a short period of time and do not disrupt business to any significant extent. What that means is, you know how we always talk about, well, if you're going to go in the summer, you might as well take a poncho. Disney was completely aware of that and chose to do it anyway.
Right.
He's like, oh, yeah, sweet poncho money. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So not only, though, did they say Orlando is the place to be, but they actually said, you're going to want to go probably southeast or east of Orlando. You don't even want to touch west, northwest, and north because that's where all the orange groves are. And orange groves sell at about $4,000 to $6,000 an acre.
Ooh.
And yeah, because that's actually producing something. You don't right. want land that's actually producing anything. There's plenty of other land off in this area. So the idea of just going southeast and east, again, all of this came from these reports that were being done. So Bill Lund comes back, ERA presents this report to Disney, and Disney says, okay, then, you know, based on what they're telling us, it's got to be somewhere in this southeast east area of Orlando. And again, at this point, like, you would think they're doing this research, they've got this company involved, they're making these decisions. Like, I feel like nowadays so many people would have to be in on this. But at this point, it's still seven leaders. So outside of, you know, Walt and Roy, there are seven people in the company that know about it. Card Walker knows about it. Don Tatum, Jack Sayers, you know, what, Larry Tyrin, Mel Meltron, Joe Fowler, and then Bob Foster, who is the general counsel for Disney, also knows about this project. And that's it. In the entire company, those seven guys are it.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, they encompass everybody who knows anything about this project. And everybody else, the idea that Disney's building on the East Coast doesn't even exist. So Walt says, okay, we've got this report. Now we need to determine what plots of land we're actually going to be looking at. ERA had included, like, you guys might want to look at this plot, you might want to look at this plot. This is what we think it might cost. You know, we've done some preliminary research, but now you've actually got to go see if you can actually get it for the right price. So Walt sends Bob Foster, again, who is the general counsel, down to Florida to look at the plots. And again, this is the part that I love about this, because this is where it gets so cloak and dagger. Like, he goes and starts talking with this Miami lawyer named Paul Helliwell. And Helliwell actually used to work for the CIA. Prior to becoming a lawyer in Miami, he's a CIA operative. And he tells Bob, hey, your name is Bob Foster. And Bob Foster's name shows up as a member of the Disney Productions.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're in the company minutes, you're in the company directory. That's going to tie back to you. So maybe when you're in Florida, you're not Robert Foster, you're Bob Price, because Robert Price Foster is your full name. So let's just go by your middle name. And then I'm going to get you in touch with this Florida real estate consultant, and you can kind of work through him alongside him. And that way, maybe people don't put this together as quickly. And not only does Bob do this, but he doesn't fly directly between California and Florida, because if he does that, then at some point maybe his flight records can be looked up, right?
This is so crazy.
Yeah. He's stopping in St. Louis to go visit his mother in Kansas, and then jumping on a different plane a little bit later to continue his flight on to Florida or to California, whichever way he's going. So he's using an assumed identity. He is never, you know, he's trying to avoid flying. I'm not going to say never, because I don't know that he never did, but he said he made a point of trying to stop off in St. Louis. So he...
For a theme park.
Yes, for a theme, but for Disney.
Yeah.
For Disney, who, again, is, you know, we all know that, like, at the very beginning, a lot of people said, I don't know if this whole Disneyland thing is going to work. Like, theme parks are all fine and good, but you're going a little crazy here, Walt. And then suddenly it blows up. And
right.
So now everybody knows Disney is a name to get behind. So again, if you want cheap property, you don't let the name Disney ever show up. So he begins working with you know, Roy Hawkins and Paul Helliwell in South Florida, and he's trying to go to all these different locations, and he's even trying to be careful. He actually got coaching on the phonetics of how to say stuff around there so that he could sound like he was from the area. But, you know, again, in an interview he did, he said that he actually was at a gas station, and then the gas station attendant said, you're not a native, where are you from? And it was because he had said, so how far is it to Kissimmee? And then instead of saying Kissimmee, like, just that slight adjustment, you know, kicked that service station, and he goes, you ain't from around here, are you? You know, and Bob's like, oh, crud, I'm going to be figured out. They're going to know I'm from California. So he said that he learned that he was supposed to listen and not talk. But again, just like the levels that he had to go through to try to keep everything on the DL were just insane. But anyway, so he goes and looks at all these different lots, and he looks at the Reedy Creek Bay Lake area lots, which we all know eventually become Walt Disney World, right? But he does not like these lots. He thinks these lots are going to be an absolute nightmare to get. And the reason is because there are some areas, like I think there's like a 7,600 acre lot that's owned by Erlo Bronson, who at that time is the state senator. And if you think that name sounds familiar, it's because there's, you know, the Erlo Bronson. It's, you know, you see it on the road. They're in Florida now. So yeah, if you go, why does that name sound? That's why that name sounds familiar. But yes, at that point, he owns like 7,600 acres. That's easy to get our hands on. The problem is we've got this 2,500 acre plot that this guy named Mr. Munger had been selling through a mail order operation in 5 acre plots.
This sounds like Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, yeah. So he'd taken, so he's just like, I'm going to sell 5 acres to you. And if you want to buy 5 acres, just send $30 to, you know, and I don't know what the amount is or anything, but yeah, it's essentially in the back of a magazine. If you want to own some land in the bustling, you know, I'm sure it sounded so picturesque the way it was described and not in the middle of nowhere, Florida. But
yeah, he had to have been thinking that no one was ever going to come.
Right, right. And in fact, I think that, when Bob Foster was interviewed about this, he said that the subdivision was apparently performed by a draftsman who had likely never seen the... So he's like, this was not, you know, broken up based on anything that actually made sense. They just said, all right, let's just chop it into 5 acre plots. But he looks at that and he goes, we don't want to deal with that because... That means there are individual owners for each one of those 5 acre plots. And we're going to have to talk to each individual owner and buy that 5 acre plot. So instead he's, you know, again, he's continuing to look. That isn't the only play. He recognizes that seems like a good possibility, except for that huge headache. So that's
except
not going
to
happen.
Except for old Mr. Munger.
Right. So he actually comes back to California and he says, Walt, there's this land over here in the Daytona Beach area. And I think that's where we need to build. And
Walt Disney has the best comeback to that.
Yes. Bob said, then came the unequivocal sign of Walt's disapproval. No words, no gestures, just an arched eyebrow. Walt's only comment was, Bob, what the hell are you doing way up there?
This is not what we discussed.
Right. I sent you down there to look east and southeast of Orlando because that's where ERA told us to be, and you're trying to get me to go buy stuff over in Daytona Beach. Like that's not what we agreed that's not what we agreed on. And so then Walt goes, hey, you know what, this plot of land looks perfect, why can't we have this plot of land? And you know, Bob is probably grumbling under his breath, oh my gosh, why didn't I mark that off the map? And oh gosh. So what should have been like a 6-month project turns into like a year long project because he then has to buy up the what they called the Munger plots. And essentially he, before everything goes kablooey, he manages to buy like 60 to 65 of these plots, and he's made relationships with 30 to 40 of the additional owners, which is going to help,
yeah, because all these people who just bought one little tiny plot of it from the back of the magazine.
Right, right. I've got 5 acres over in Florida. And he said that he had to travel to California, Texas, Rhode Island, and Pennsylvania to talk to people who had never even been to their plot. They own that plot of land, but they'd never seen it in person.
Yeah, I want to buy that from you.
Yeah, they were like, I just want to hold on to this, or yeah, maybe I'd be willing to let it go. But I love this one story, and I've got to read it verbatim. And again, that make sure that you go and read of all the articles there, like the D23 article just has so much stuff with Bob Foster in it. And it's so awesome to read his stories. But he said the most memorable visit with a property owner was in the Appalachian Mountains of Tennessee. This particular owner of a Munger lot greeted the council at his house at 7 a.m. By 9, I had sampled my host wild cherry wine with a generous portion of upside down cake, had been treated to a session of self-taught banjo, and shared his pride of ownership with a white mule that was the best damn mule in all of Tennessee. But when I left, I had still not bought and never did buy that sorry piece of real estate that he acquired from his uncle in trade for a cultivator and another mule. I must admit, total failure, but if only I'd had a mule. And that's just one story. Like,
so weird.
Can you imagine going, okay, well, I get to go up to the Appalachian Mountains and... this ought to be, and then you pull up at this guy, and he's, hey, You know, but this is a nice dude. He's like sharing his, you know, he shared his right. wild cherry wine. He gave him some cake. He's telling him all about everything. I mean, but apparently but he...
Bob's just sitting there like, oh, yeah, this is really good. Oh, wow, you're a really good banjo. Mm-hmm. Oh.
Now, about that property.
Nah, I don't want to sell it.
Nah, that was worth a cultivator and a mule. And how does that trade, like, I want to know what went through that guy's mind that he's thinking, you know what, I've got a cultivator and a mule, but what I could really use is 5 acres of prime Florida yeah. real estate.
He had a cultivator, a mule, and a dumb uncle.
yeah. because that uncle gave away some very yeah. popular property later on. But yeah, so they buy the larger tracts, you know, like again, 7,600 acres belong to Earl O'Bronson, 2,500 acres is all tied up in this Munger plot. And then there are some other larger plots as well, that they're buying up, but they actually initially bought them all in, Helliwell, who remember is the Miami lawyer. They bought them in his name. But they said, you know what? We're starting to buy an awful lot of property in his name, and the rumors are going to start swirling that this one lawyer is buying up all this property. So why don't we set up some shell corporations? Because nothing sounds more crystal clean and Disney-fied than shell corporations,
this,
right?
This is probably my favorite part of this whole thing. Shell companies. In order to buy land.
So they've got, you know, they had multiple ones, but the names included things like Reedy Creek Ranch Lands, Bay Lake Properties Incorporated, the Latin American Development and Management Corporation, Tomahawk Properties Incorporated, and my favorite one, I-4 Corporation.
Why is that your favorite?
Spelled A-Y-E-F-O-U-R. Because I-4 is the major
the
thoroughfare.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so they went, you know what? Let's go with a nice little play on words here. We're going to call it the I-4 Corporation. Yeah, so they build all these different corporations. So these corporations can start, this corporation can buy some property, and that corporation can buy some property. And then no one will have any clue what's going on. And the result of this is that by June of 1965, they had acquired 20. Okay, so remember, 16 acres in Burbank, 160 acres in Anaheim, 27,258 acres
in Central Florida.
They had acquired, right, and this was by June of 65. They had acquired that many acres, and they had spent somewhere around $5 million. And I think most places that I see say that the average per acre price on that was like $180 per acre.
Well, let me do some quick math here, and I'll tell you.
so remember that those orange groves are going to cost $4,000 to $6,000 yeah. per acre.
Or you can buy all of this land for $184.12 per acre.
Well, there you go. So approximately $180 per acre. So they so you know what, they've got the land. They are well on their way to prosperity and getting everything dirt cheap.
Mm-hmm. So after, like, once all this starts happening, the media in Florida starts to notice that there's an awful lot of land being bought up in the Orlando area.
It might be being bought by, like, 12 different people, but yeah. That suddenly became a hotbed for property.
All of these little tracts of land and stuff are slowly making one big giant piece of land. A local television studio in Florida got swept up by the excitement, and they got a telegram from Detroit that confirmed that Ford was definitely the buyer of all this land. And then they received a second telegram corroborating that Ford was the buyer of this land and that they really needed it because they needed to grow hay for all of their Mustangs.
Yes, which then makes the reporter go, oh no. and they ran this report because they got a telegram from Detroit. Ford's in Detroit, and they said that Ford's buying this, so surely Ford is the one.
Surely. Couldn't be any other big company.
Nah.
So it was also speculated that companies like McDonnell Douglas and Boeing were buying all this land because of its proximity to Kennedy Space Center, and, you know, on Cape Canaveral.
Yeah, but it wasn't just because of that. Remember, earlier we talked about all the cloak and dagger stuff that our good buddy Bob Foster / Bob Price had been doing, where he never took a plane directly between California and Florida, and he always stopped over in St. Louis. Well, St. Louis also had this little place in it called McDonnell Aircraft. So, you know, when you're trying to figure out who's buying this land, well, there's this guy who keeps on coming in from out of town, and he keeps on flying back into good old St. Louis, you know, which just goes to prove that he was totally right in not flying back and forth between California, because they would have picked that up. And meanwhile, he had done that. Roy Hawkins, who, remember, is the real estate consultant that worked with Bob to buy all this land, apparently, while he was on a trip with his wife to Seattle, he stopped by and picked up some postcards that featured Boeing aircraft on them. And then he would send postcards letting people know, hey, just remembering you, you know. And so by sending postcards with Boeing stuff on them, kind of fed fuel to the fire the rumor that Boeing was maybe the one moving down there. So it was because of the closeness to Kennedy Space Center. It was also because of a little subterfuge that was going on.
And as ridiculous as this last little piece of rumor sounds,
my favorite little piece of this rumor,
a group of people believed that the mafia was buying all this land up to hide bodies in the swampland or to build a casino.
I don't understand what the or there is for. They bought 27,000 acres. That could definitely be an and, to hide the bodies and build a casino. And if you do too well at the casino, you become one of the hidden bodies.
So Disneyland had a tencennial celebration. Is that a word? Tencennial?
So it wasn't a word up until the publicist for Disneyland went, hey, you know what? Kindermoon. I mean, tencennial sounds like a really good word. So we're going to. Yeah, no, Disneyland's publicist coined that term to describe the 10-year anniversary of Disneyland. So they had this year-long tencennial celebration.
Good on them for coining a word even way back then. So Disney would fly out different reporters from different regions of the country to visit the park and kind of, you know, get a little wined and dined, have some time with Walt Disney. This is kind of a way to drum up interest.
Basically, they said, when you get back home, maybe you write a story about how amazing Disneyland is and how the tencennial is going on for 1 year only.
Right. And there's exclusive merchandise.
I don't know. I bet you the tencennial did have exclusive merchandise. Yes. I bet Disney was in on that even then.
People needed keychains and t-shirts back then.
Absolutely.
One of the reporters was from the Orlando Sentinel. And her name was Emily Bavar, and she asked one of the Disneyland publicists, what's all this we hear about Disney buying a lot of land in Florida? And the Disney publicist said, beats me, you'll have to ask Walt tomorrow at lunch, which I think was a bad thing for Disney, you know, public relations to say. You should probably be a little more deny-y as like the first line of defense against rumors, especially rumors you're willing to go so far as to build shell corporations and make people have assumed identities and stuff to protect, you know?
Well, but here's the problem. Again, remember, most people in the company have absolutely no clue. I don't know that the project is actually, even at this point, spread beyond seven. So it
she
would
may
be
not
kind
have
of,
even known.
Yeah, it would be kind of like me, you know, I don't know. Hey, Disney, what's up with all that buying land up on the moon? Yeah, why don't you go ahead and ask that one to Walt? That'll be fine. You crazy reporters, you come up with the silliest stories. Land in Florida. Why would we buy land in a swamp?
Yeah. And that's, she said, she asked Walt, and he started rattling off all of these reasons why Florida would be a bad place to build a theme park, which only proved to her that he had been looking in Florida because he knew so much stuff about Central Florida.
Well, you know, around the Orlando area, it typically runs about 83 degrees.
Yeah.
In mid-March. And we don't want to be anywhere where it's going to be over 80 degrees in mid-March. So I think Orlando would be horrible. And the way that the traffic is structured around Orlando.
Yeah.
Like, well, but how does she not, maybe Walt is just really interested in the Orlando area. Maybe that's his pastime. Trains in the Orlando area,
yeah.
Central Florida.
It reminds me of when people were asking Tim Cook if Apple was going to make a watch, like a wearable, and he started to launch into these very specific, like only 22% of people under the age of 35 are wearing watches these days, and we're just not sure that's going to be a good industry. You know, it's like, why would you know that unless you had done major research? Don't be so specific.
If Tim Cook had our podcast, he could have kept it a secret for a little bit longer.
And she said that Walt looked like somebody had thrown a bucket of water in his face when she asked that question. You know, what is this we hear about Disney buying a bunch of land in Florida? Like, he apparently was a really bad liar. Like, and he had no poker face at all. So she wrote a story and wired it back to Orlando with the title Disney Hedges Big Question. And then when she returned to Orlando, her editors realized that this was probably more than just a rumor. And they ran another story called Is Our Mystery Industry Disney, which really shed a lot of unwanted attention on what was actually going on there.
Well, and remember that even like up to this point, it's not that weird to hear. She is nowhere near the first person to say, hey, Disney might be the ones buying it, because we had that, you know, that TV station who said, hey, Ford's buying it. And Everybody is throwing their two cents in to who they think is buying it. So our editors here, oh, Disney didn't directly answer your question. Whatever. we'll run your story because we need something to fill it back up, you know, to fill out the paper. But then she comes back and they start talking to her and she's like, well, he knew what the average rainfall was in June. And they're like, maybe he knew a little. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're not crazy. Maybe there is something to this.
So Joe Potter, who is the vice president of the Florida Project, and Bob Jackson of WED Enterprises, flew to Orlando to scout places to hold the November 15th announcement about Disney coming to Florida. So basically where to tell everyone, like, yep, it's us. We're coming to Florida.
We finally have enough stuff locked down. Maybe not all the property, but we got most of the property, and we're finally ready to tell everybody about this. So let's figure out where we're going to do it, and then we'll let the cat out of the bag, and it's going to be awesome because we can we can tell everybody, haha, we have pulled the wool over your eyes.
So Joe Potter met Bob Foster and Bob Jackson with a copy of the Orlando Sentinel that was the next Sunday. So basically a Sunday. They run the article that says Disney Hedges Big Question.
The little blurb where they're like, whatever, Emily, we need to cover some space, so we'll let you run your silly little article.
Right. So then she returns to Orlando, and Thursday they run Is Our Mystery Industry Disney? And then the following Sunday they run We Say Mystery Industry is Disney. So they have gone from Disney Hedges Big Question to maybe it's Disney to we say it's definitely Disney. And they quoted a grocery store clerk who said, strange men from California keep coming to get sodas from me.
See, if they only hadn't gotten the sodas, they would have never been caught if they hadn't gone and bought sodas at the grocery store. But just imagine, like, you feel like you have made it so far.
Right.
And here you're in town looking for where you're going to hold your press conference to announce to the world that you are coming to Florida, and boom, you go to pick up a paper on Sunday morning and there's your announcement on the front page of the Orlando Sentinel.
Yeah, man. But honestly, at this point, do they care? I mean, they've already bought the land for nothing. I just feel like at this point they were probably disappointed. But at the same time, it's kind of like a shrug, you know. At least this didn't come out a year ago.
Yeah, but it's still a couple of weeks before when you wanted to announce it. And maybe they were still, you never know. They could have still been holding out for that last piece or two of land they were hoping to get before the announcement came out. And those, because, you know, they still bought a little bit more land after the announcement. and apparently paid some higher prices.
Yeah.
As people figured out who it was.
Well, I bet old Banjo Cherry Wine Man would have sold him his little tract of land for $5 million more dollars.
There you go.
At that point.
If you just need this 5 more acres.
I'll take $1 million an acre. Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah,
that was him playing banjo.
So anyway, Sunday, October 24th, 1965, you get We Say Mystery Industry is Disney.
They're blowing the roof off of it.
That's right. And everything is ruined. All the cloak and dagger, all of the false names, none of it matters anymore because of those. What's the deal from Scooby-Doo? Meddling kids.
Yeah, I would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
Yes, from this meddling kid, Emily Bavar.
And so the next day, October 25th.
The governor is scheduled to be up at the Florida League of Municipalities convention on the 25th. And Disney is now scrambling going, okay, well, the cat's out of the bag, but we want to be responsible for letting the cat out of the bag. We don't want the Sentinel for being responsible for the cat being out of the bag. And it's going to... All of our threads are going to come undone between now and there's no way we're making it to November 15th. So somebody call the governor. Okay, yeah, he's got something going on and it's actually dealing with municipalities. So he's going to be talking to people anyway. Sweet. Let's just let him say that we are the ones coming and then we're the ones who told everybody. It's not the Orlando Sentinel. It's not old Emily Bavar. She didn't get the best of us.
We had already planned this.
Yeah. She heard what we were going to tell the governor anyway. Like, in reading this, does she not deserve a medal or something for investigative journalism?
She's pretty smart.
Because they had all these people coming to this area, you know, and there were it's not like she was the only reporter from that entire area. You know, they were bringing like 12 reporters at a time to come and meet Walt. So there were other reporters from the state. And there were other reporters from adjoining states, and everybody at this point, I'm sure, had heard about these huge land purchases.
Right.
And they just kind of, you know, when they heard her talking to Walt Disney about it, they kind of laughed it off. Meanwhile, she goes, this seems like a story, and then does the legwork and goes and talks to the grocery store clerk. And I'm sure a lot of other people that may be corroborated a little bit better than strange men from Florida coming to get sodas or strange men from California coming to get sodas. But yeah, like, I think that's awesome that she keyed in on that so much and went, yeah, we need to run with it.
Yeah.
It was convincing enough that she sold her editors on going front page. And like that would have been suicide had they somehow gotten that wrong.
Right. Well, and just like in the course of a week to get, you know, the editors from, okay, whatever, to, oh, yeah, this is definitely happening. Like, I hope she got a big raise and a promotion and all that because, yeah, she definitely deserved some kudos.
Yeah, so kudos to Emily Bavar, but I mean, how is this not just a super fun story to get to go through to see the levels of subterfuge of spycraft that are being practiced to purchase some land in the middle of nowhere Florida, all so that Walt Disney World could be what it is today.
Right. It's pretty amazing. And again, this is one of my very favorite pieces of Disney trivia. There's more to the story. We're kind of stopping in the middle. There's a lot more to it after they buy the land that we will do, you know, we'll talk more about later.
Not next episode because this one wore us out in doing the research just for this one, but at some point we definitely need to cover because, you know, initially we wanted to cover Reedy Creek and all the weirdness and the legislature and all that stuff that went on with this. But this was a podcast all on its own, just leading up to
the
announcement coming out.
So there will be more where we go. We'll tell the rest of this story. But this will be the end of this episode. You can follow us on Twitter at MTM Podcast. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/MTM Podcast. And you can visit us on the web at missingthemouse.co. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And until then, have a magical day.